flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Part of the problem in our world is the inability to know where to begin if we want to make changes. If we want to try to help our community, a lot of times we feel intimidated by doing the research and finding places and reputable people to work with. And that can be a big issue in getting off the couch and getting into your community to make an actual difference. I am a fan of this gentleman. I had a chance to talk with him on another radio show and sit down face to face. We had a great conversation that day, and I wanted to bring him back on today to talk about this, especially with Minneapolis and the state it's in, and finding ways to get more involved in helping people, helping our neighbors, and helping our community. Reverend Tim Christopher joins us here now on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hi, Reverend Tim. Thanks for being here, sir.
Well, thank you for having me on, Dave. I definitely appreciate it.
It's great talking with you, catching up with you. I loved your openness, your awareness of the situations and the communities and the things that are going on around us and finding ways to get out there. Do you find that a lot of people are hesitant to get involved in helping simply because they don't know where to begin?
Yeah, I've come to that realization to see that, like you said, a lot of people just don't know where to start. A lot of people try to get into it. In a way, for the wrong reasons. If you're going to come out and you're going to help the community, if you're going to do something, I've found that a lot of people don't do it from the heart. They do it to get clicks or to be on social media and things of that sort. So in order to be a part of it, really be a part of it, you just got to leave yourself aside and go out and do the things that needs to be done.
How do we get the groundswell grassroots effort from the neighborhoods and get people involved? Is it just door knocking like it used to be? Is it, you know, obviously social media, I would have thought would have been a good way by extending the olive branch and seeing people out in the community doing work and people posting for clicks and posting for acknowledgement, making more people aware of the things that are going on in their area. But I can see how you could see that as being counterproductive as well.
Yeah, it's having neighborhood meetings. You know, it's getting out there and letting people know where they can help, what they can do, and who to get involved with, and what organization to get involved with. You know, some of these organizations are out here; they're out here pretty much for themselves. There's been millions and millions and millions of dollars dumped into Minneapolis. And you don't see any change because I'm not talking for anybody else. I'm just saying what I see.
Right.
I don't feel that money goes to the right people. And I don't think, like I said before, I don't see it in a way of saying the right people are actually out here with their boots on the ground doing the things they're supposed to do to make the community better and the people in the community better. I think a large part of these people who are out here are out here because they feel that they can make a difference, true. But then they get to the point to where they understand that there's even a lot of people in the community that don't want to help. And it kind of, you know, make the people who are out here, you know, feel bad. I mean, I walked away. I mean, I walked the streets back in 1996 in Minneapolis when I lived right there on 3rd Street. And I started seeing that, you know, I had really no help from the community at large. And it was taken away from my family. I had two boys at the time, you know, married to my wife, and it was taken away from them. And I'm trying to do everything I can to make the community better, but the community just do not want to come along and do the things that needs to be done. So it's also the community, too.
I lived in Minneapolis, like I said a little bit earlier, 5226 Irving Avenue North in Minneapolis for five years, and loved the community. You know, we had a nice little starter home. The neighbors were great. I actually knew my neighbors, Reverend Tim, if you could imagine that. And this wasn't 40, 50 years ago. This was 25 years ago. And I lived there, and we knew our neighbors. We watched out for each other, and, you know, we would have big block parties, and everybody from the community around was welcome, and everybody stayed to clean up afterwards. And the ones that left and left a mess, the other neighbors didn't mind. We all had our garbage cans out on the street, and we're picking up the plates and the napkins and the cups and moving on, and there was pride in the community, pride and community meaning not just, you know, being a middle-class white male. It wasn't just a bunch of middle-class white people that I was friends with in our neighborhood. It was the Rainbow Coalition, my friend. We had everybody from every walk of life in our neighborhood, and everybody got along. Everybody was able to come together to work and do these things, and we saw the commonalities as opposed to the derision and the strife that's going on. And seems to be so prevalent right now. Where do you think the breakdown came that people stopped with their concern about community and became more focused on the concern for the individual? I don't want to put in any more work than I have to. I don't want to have to do anything more than I have to. And nothing's going to get better. Seems to kind of just be the cry of the day.
Well, I think, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the way it was. I mean, I lived on 2729 North 3rd Street. You know, I was right behind the park there on Lindale. And, you know, if you drop below the 40s back in the day, that's where all the trouble was. If you stayed above the 40s, you could live a good life. And like you said, you can go outside. You can have a good time. You can enjoy your neighbor. You knew your neighbor. But you drop below the 40s, that's where all the hooligans were at, and people who looked at Minneapolis in a way of saying, I'm going to do whatever I want. And they terrorized the community. And that started seeping up to the 40s, right? And the 50s. And people start going, wow, you know, I'm putting all this time into this community, and I have no community leaders that is going to push back on making my community something that it's really not. And it just, I mean, you could see the dark cloud leave, you know, the 20s and the 30s going up to the 40s and the 50s, up to where you was at, instead of it being the other way around, where the dark cloud, you know, disappears coming down on the 40s and the 30s and the 20s, you know, and all this ugliness and all the crime and the criminals, you know, went the other way and disappeared. But that didn't happen. Because the community was so pushed down by that time that you're talking about, there was no coming back. There was no one that actually wanted to step up because they was afraid. You understand what I'm saying? They was afraid that, you know, if I spoke out, then they were going to come to my house, that I'll wake up in the morning and I've got, you know, gang members standing in my driveway, threatening me, telling me to shut my mouth. And the normal, everyday taxpayer, the law-abiding citizens, just clammed up and said, you know what? No one's going to protect me. Police officers that'll show up in enough time to make sure that everything is going to be fine with me. I don't have community leaders. I don't have the city council behind me. I don't have the mayor behind me. So a lot of people just gave up.
But how much of that was conjecture? How much of that was misinformation about what was living and breathing and breeding in that community, meaning the hooligans and the problem? Was it real? Was there that concern, or was it just fear that ran the people and pushed a lot of people out of the community? I only moved just because I was outgrowing. I had a 2-bedroom house, and I had a family, you know, so I just couldn't afford to live there. I just moved about a mile down the road into Brooklyn Center, and bought a bigger house there for a while. But was a lot of it just misconception, or was there a legitimate fear and a real problem there?
No, that was legitimate fear. Because you got to remember, 97, 98, and 99 was Murderapolis.
Right.
Where a lot of black men lost their lives. A lot of innocent people who walked up and down Broadway, Lyndale, Plymouth, Penn, Lowry, lost their lives. That's when the takeover pretty much began, the real takeover that we still see today. Begin, and people was going, well, nothing's going to happen. We don't have leadership that's going to take care of this problem. You know, I know it's not a Maple Grove, but the people, the taxpayers, should have every right. People who pay taxes on a house, who actually own their home, and even people who were, you know, renting there, who was good renters, that kept their yards up, made sure everything was nice. You know, those people are the ones that was going, nothing is changing. It's getting worse. Mm. You look at Broadway today, and from the time that I moved over there, I moved in North Minneapolis in 1996 when Mayor Shells Belton was having that program where she was trying to bring families back to Minneapolis. And we bought our first house right there. And in 1996, by 99, I was looking for a place to move my family. Because like I said, I lived right in the middle of everything that was going on. There wasn't a day that I did not drive down Lyndale that I didn't see yellow tape or go down Penn and I didn't see teddy bears in a memorial for somebody who just got shot, you know?
Yeah.
So it was truly the product that was in the community at the time and what was going on.
We have to take a quick break. Our guest, Reverend Tim Christopher, and discussing what we can do. How can we take back the communities, especially right now? There's so much derision in our country, in our world, and certainly in our cities. There's racial inequality. There's racial stress and pressure that still exists here. People are afraid to make moves for fear that it will be misconstrued and misunderstood. Is there a way that we, the people, can come together and fix the problems that we see? And Reverend Tim, I'd love some more of your insight, because I love the fact that you understand the communities, you understand the people that are there and what's taking place, and you don't sugarcoat, you don't broad stroke it or minimize the issues. So let's talk about that. And if you have questions or thoughts, 651-461-9226. That's the WCCO talk and text line, 651-461-9226. I'm Dave Schrader filling in for Shaletta here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Shaletta has a day off. I'm Dave Schrader filling in, my guest, Reverend Tim Christopher. Tim, I grew up in the Illinois area, just 22 miles west of Chicago. I was there when Mayor Jane Byrne, a prominent white female mayor, I think the first female mayor of Chicago, decided enough was enough, and she moved into Caprini Green, which was the slumland of slumlands. It was one of the most dangerous hotbeds of villainy and scum, as they would say in the Star Wars world. But she moved in, and it was cleaned up, and it became a tolerable place for people to coexist. And That was surprising. I've heard that it has since fell back into disrepair. But, you know, changes like this can be made. Why do you feel that government and taxpayers are not stepping up to do this? Is it just straight up fear for their own lives because of the community that currently lives and exists in that area?
Well, I think that right now leadership feels that the only thing they have to do is give some of these organizations money. And they refuse to look at the true reason why we're having these problems. You know, a lot of these problems, it is poverty. Don't get me wrong. But I believe that if we go into these schools and deal with these troubled kids, I think we can knock a lot of this out. I think if we give some of our kids who are going through the trouble, who don't get to see the outside of, you know, Minneapolis, at least once, only once a month, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt them. I mean, I'm going to believe in what I see, right? And if these kids have had the opportunity maybe to go to a Maple Grove or Plymouth or Hopkins or something like that for school and get them out of this war-torn area, you know, where they hear gunshots, where they walk it home from school and somebody drive up to them and think that, you know, this guy bullied him at some point in time and he want to punk him and things of that sort. They give these kids an opportunity to see that they can grow, then the community is going to grow. But as long as you keep these kids locked up the way that they are and don't give them opportunity to get an education, don't give them an opportunity to see that things in their lives can be much better than what it is, then I think we're going to stay in the situation that we're in. I do believe that we can make a difference. There can be a difference that can be made, but just throwing millions of dollars to these organizations and these organizations call themselves doing something, it hasn't worked. And they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, instead of going and getting the head of the snake. That's the family unit, right? We all talk about, you know, I always hear this nuclear family. I always hear about, oh, there should be a mom and a dad in the house. I believe that too. I 110% believe that. But let's be real for a second, okay? It's not going to happen for a while. And the kids that are running around here today more than likely don't have a father in the house. So what do? We work with the mom. And we get the mom to the point to try where you try to understand what's going on in this household that we can work with these kids to make these kids better. The big thing up at the Capitol right now is SROs, correct? Oh, we need SROs in the school. It's not every kid in the school that's a problem. They know who the problem kid is, Dave. They know who these kids are. Then why don't we work with those kids to make it better for them? Why can't we find programs to help the mom, to help the kid? So what do? We lock the school down, right? We fold the kid up or put him down on the floor where he can't breathe. And then we let that kid go back to the same problems that he was at the school with those problems.
Do you think?
So now we
let me ask real quickly then. Do you think, you know, it's really easy as a middle class white man to stand back and point fingers and see the problems and say this, this, and this. I think that we've lost respect for authority on every level.
Yes.
In every race.
Yes.
I don't think this is a black problem. I don't think this is an Asian problem. I don't think this is a Hmong problem. I don't think this is a white problem. I think that we have gone so far to try to and I understand an aspect of this, but, you know, trying to lighten up on people and not hold them as responsible has been criminal in my eyes, because
that's right.
You no longer have the sense of responsibility. Kids have no fear for authority, no respect for authority. Well, Dave, there should never be fear. Yes, there should. Fear is what teaches us not to put our hands on the fire. Fear is what teaches us not to jump on the fragile, you know, ice water. We have to have a respectful fear of a situation to understand that there are repercussions for our actions. And if you have no respect or fear for the repercussions, you go to jail or you get killed. And that's not an answer that should happen for anybody. How do we, and I know these are big questions, I'm not asking you for the definitive answers, but how do we start to get this back? I mean, we have swung so far, and you said, you know, we know who the problem child is, but everybody's so afraid to address it because I can't, you know, I can't single Josh Wheeler out. Because if I make Josh Wheeler feel bad about being Josh Wheeler, I can now be sued. The school district can be sued. These things can be sued because we've made Josh feel bad. And we can't do that, which means then they become a victim of their own circumstances and of our own over concern. And instead of saying, that sucks, it's going to hurt his feelings. But you know what? I'd rather hurt his feelings today and have him learn to be a better person in the long run than to not say anything and let him continue to be a blight to everybody. And I don't mean you purposely, Josh. I was just using the name. But people are afraid to make that step now, Reverend. What do you think we can do? Or is this even fixable at this point?
It is fixable. But again, Dave, we have to start with the family, right? Because the people who are out in the streets causing problems, causing trouble, have a family. They go back to a house, and that house is probably rife with problems, rife with trouble. You know, maybe mom and grandma is in that house raising boys, and it's hard to raise boys. So these boys can run all over the place and do whatever they want and act any way they want to act. And the next thing you know, here they are out here in the streets doing whatever. There is no leadership. We've lost the ability to be leaders all the way around, whether there's leaders in the house, whether there's leaders at the city council, whether there's leaders at the Capitol. We don't have any leaders anymore. So because we don't have any leaders anymore, we're able to run out and do whatever we want. And because we're able to do whatever we want, we have some out there going, don't punish them because we failed them, right?
Right.
And because we failed them, we can't put them in jail. Because we failed them, we can't make them feel bad because they're doing the wrong thing. Wrong is wrong. Right. You shoot and kill somebody, you need to go to jail. Mm-hmm. There is no bargaining at all. You go to jail. That's just how it works. It's always been that way. And it shouldn't be one of these, oh, well, we put so many black men in jail. We can't keep filling the prison up with black men. If black men are shooting, killing people on the streets of Minneapolis, oh, we can fill it up, as far as I'm concerned. People know good from bad.
Right.
That's just how it works. You learn that at 5 years old. Right. Mom tell you don't do something. You do it. Mom spanked that hand. Well, I know I did something bad. But I'm going to sit here and somebody shoot somebody, plead guilty on it. And yeah, I'm going to give you 5 years. No,
right.
Shouldn't work that way, bro.
If that 5 years occurs, what are your thoughts on this? We understand this person might have been a victim of the circumstances they were in, where they saw violence as their only way. That 5 years is going to be intensive restructuring. That 5 years is going to be making you work in the communities that you were terrorizing to make it a better place to live. We're going to make sure that when you leave this 5 years, you will have learned economics. You will have learned how to cook for yourself. You will have learned how to take care of your finances. You will have learned the important aspects of what it's like to have responsibility, not just yard time. And if you want, you can educate. You know, I think that if we started at, you said it kind of at the beginning, if we can take people back to a place of education and take them off the streets, give them a sense of purpose, it helps all the way around. No matter what race, religion, or sexuality you are, there should be no reason that you hide under the umbrella of your situation. And maybe you didn't know better because you felt like there was no other option for you. Then let's give them the option, but make sure that they don't have to like it, but the 5 years they're going to spend here is going to be focused on making a better life for them so that when they leave, we feel better about the person that we're injecting back into the deal instead of them having time to create a new gang-like community in prison, which only reinforces the thug nature and then re-release them into the population. I think it's time we start focusing on what are we doing in prisons to make sure that people's lives are changing?
Well, one of the things that I had been pushing for the past couple of years.
Reverend Tip, could we? I'll talk about that in a second. I just realized we're up against our break. Let me take the break. We'll come back. Talk to me about that when we return. I'm Dave Schrader. This is News Talk 830 WCCO. Dave Schrader filling in for Shaletta. Police Chief Brian O'Hara is going to join us in just a few minutes. Right now, we have Reverend Tim Christopher on the line. I know you've got an exciting party, a baby shower for your granddaughter coming up. Congratulations on that, Reverend Tim. We'll get you to give us your insights right now on what we were discussing before the break, and I'll let you get to that party.
Yeah. So one of the things that I had been pushing for and asking is to open up a place. You know, we had a totem town at one point in time where we can send our kids to that was having trouble, having problems. And I've been an opponent push to bring that back, but do it in a military style, right? You send these kids, these troubled kids to a place like that. You get them up at a certain time. They go to bed at a certain time. They are in a military style place versus just sending them to daycare, because that's basically what they pretty much call it. And then you just let them out. They don't come out with a GED. They don't come out with any type of special skills than being, you know, worse than what they were when they was going in there, because they can get together and talk about what they want to do when they get out. That's what we need. We need something that we can rehabilitate these kids. Just like you sent a young man into the military. The military strips this young man down, this young man, and then build a man. And when you come back, that's what you are. You're a man. And that's what needs to be done now. We can't get these kids get in trouble, and then we put them in juvie for a year maybe and expect them to come out of juvie being angels. It's not going to happen. It's just going to harden them. But if you go and you give them something to work towards, to work for,
structure,
I believe we can, exactly, I believe we can make a difference that way. But see, we have to get to the point to where we really want to do this. This can't be one of those things, oh, we're hurting the kids and they're going in these places and we got them locked up enough. We can't do that. We can't do that anymore. Those days are over with. We have to get to a point to where we're sitting there saying, this is for the benefit of this kid. And not only is this a benefit of this kid, but this is a benefit for his family. Not only is a benefit for the family, but this is a benefit for the law-abiding citizen that could be walking down the street and that very kid jumps that law-abiding citizen, carjacked that law-abiding citizen, hit that law-abiding citizen, beat that law-abiding citizen. That's where we have to start thinking, that we are really helping these kids be better. And when they get older, they can be citizens. Even though they made mistakes back here, they can be true citizens that will open a door for a woman. You understand what I'm saying?
Help
an old lady across the street, stop his car, and change a tire for someone. Those are the things that I'm talking about.
Reverend Tim Christopher, it's a pleasure catching up. We'll have to do this again. Thank you so much. Congratulations on this big day for you and your family, and stay safe out there. Thank you for all the good you're doing for the community.
Well, I appreciate you, Dave. Thank you very much for having me on. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Part of the problem in our world is the inability to know where to begin if we want to make changes. If we want to try to help our community, a lot of times we feel intimidated by doing the research and finding places and reputable people to work with. And that can be a big issue in getting off the couch and getting into your community to make an actual difference. I am a fan of this gentleman. I had a chance to talk with him on another radio show and sit down face to face. We had a great conversation that day, and I wanted to bring him back on today to talk about this, especially with Minneapolis and the state it's in, and finding ways to get more involved in helping people, helping our neighbors, and helping our community. Reverend Tim Christopher joins us here now on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hi, Reverend Tim. Thanks for being here, sir.
Well, thank you for having me on, Dave. I definitely appreciate it.
It's great talking with you, catching up with you. I loved your openness, your awareness of the situations and the communities and the things that are going on around us and finding ways to get out there. Do you find that a lot of people are hesitant to get involved in helping simply because they don't know where to begin?
Yeah, I've come to that realization to see that, like you said, a lot of people just don't know where to start. A lot of people try to get into it. I also, in a way, for the wrong reasons. If you're going to come out and you're going to help the community, if you're going to do something, I've found that a lot of people don't do it from the heart. They do it to get clicks or to be on social media and things of that sort. So in order to be a part of it and really be a part of it, you just got to leave yourself aside and go out and do the things that needs to be done.
How do we get the groundswell grassroots effort from the neighborhoods and get people involved? Is it just door knocking like it used to be? Is it, obviously social media I would have thought would have been a good way by extending the olive branch and seeing people out in the community doing work and people posting for clicks and posting for acknowledgement, making more people aware of the things that are going on in their area. But I can see how you can see that as being counterproductive as well.
Yeah, it's having neighborhood meetings. It's getting out there and letting people know where they can help, what they can do, and who to get involved with, and what organization to get involved with. Some of these organizations are out here; they're out here pretty much for themselves. There's been millions and millions and millions of dollars dumped into Minneapolis. And you don't see any change because I'm not talking for anybody else. I'm just saying what I see.
Right.
I don't feel that money goes to the right people. And I don't think, like I said before, I don't see it in a way of saying the right people are actually out here with their boots on the ground doing the things they're supposed to do to make the community better and the people in the community better. I think a large part of these people who are out here are out here because they feel that they can make a difference, true. But then they get to the point to where they understand that there's even a lot of people in the community that don't want to help. And it kind of, make the people who are out here, feel bad. I mean, I walked away. I mean, I walked the streets back in 1996. In Minneapolis when I lived right there on 3rd Street. And I started seeing that, I had really no help from the community at large. And it was taken away from my family. I had two boys at the time, married to my wife, and it was taken away from them. And I'm trying to do everything I can to make the community better, but the community just do not want to come along and do the things that needs to be done. So it's also the community, too.
I lived in Minneapolis, like I said a little bit earlier, 5226 Irving Avenue North in Minneapolis for five years and loved the community. We had a nice little starter home. The neighbors were great. I actually knew my neighbors, Reverend Tim, if you could imagine that. And this wasn't 40, 50 years ago. This was 25 years ago. And I lived there and we knew our neighbors. We watched out for each other and we would have big block parties and everybody from the community around was welcome and everybody stayed to clean up afterwards. And the ones that left and left the mess, the other neighbors didn't mind. We all had our garbage cans out on the street and we're picking up the plates and the napkins and the cups and moving on. And there was pride in the community, pride, and community meaning not just, being a middle class white male. It wasn't just a bunch of middle class white people that I was friends with in our neighborhood. It was the Rainbow Coalition, my friend. We had everybody from every walk of life in our neighborhood and everybody got along. Everybody was able to come together to work and do these things. And we saw the commonalities as opposed to the derision and the strife that's going on. And seems to be so prevalent right now. Where do you think the breakdown came that people stopped with their concern about community and became more focused on the concern for the individual? I don't want to put in any more work than I have to. I don't want to have to do anything more than I have to. And nothing's going to get better. Seems to kind of just be the cry of the day.
Well, I think, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's the way it was. I mean, I lived on 2729 North 3rd Street. You know, I was right behind the park there on Lindale. And, you know, if you drop below the 40s back in the day, that's where all the trouble was. If you stayed above the 40s, you could live a good life. And like you said, you can go outside. You can have a good time. You can enjoy your neighbor. You knew your neighbor. But you drop below the 40s, that's where all the hooligans were at, and people who looked at Minneapolis in a way of saying, I'm going to do whatever I want. And they terrorized the community. And that started seeping up to the 40s, right, and the 50s. And people started going, wow, you know, I'm putting all this time into this community, and I have no community leaders that is going to push back on making my community something that it's really not. And it just, I mean, you could see the dark cloud leave, you know, the 20s and the 30s going up to the 40s and the 50s, up to where you was at, instead of it being the other way around, where the dark cloud, you know, disappears coming down on the 40s and the 30s and the 20s, you know, and all this ugliness and all the crime and the criminals, you know, went the other way and disappeared. But that didn't happen because the community was so pushed down by that time that you're talking about. There was no coming back. There was no one that actually wanted to step up because they was afraid. You understand what I'm saying? They was afraid that, you know, if I spoke out, then they were going to come to my house, that I'll wake up in the morning and I've got, you know, gang members standing in my driveway, threatening me, telling me to shut my mouth. And the normal everyday taxpayer, the law-abiding citizen, just clammed up and said, you know what? No one's going to protect me. I don't have police officers that'll show up in enough time to make sure that everything is going to be fine with me. I don't have community leaders. I don't have the city council behind me. I don't have the mayor behind me. So a lot of people just gave up.
But how much of that was conjecture? How much of that was misinformation about what was living and breathing and breeding in that community, meaning the hooligans and the problem? Was it real? Was there that concern, or was it just fear that ran the people and pushed a lot of people out of the community? I only moved just because I was outgrowing. I had a 2-bedroom house and I had a family, you know, so I just couldn't afford to live there. I just moved about a mile down the road into Brooklyn Center and bought a bigger house there for a while. But it was a lot of it just misconception, or was there a legitimate fear and a real problem there?
No, that was legitimate fear. Because you got to remember, 97, 98, and 99 was Murderapolis.
Right.
Where a lot of black men lost their lives. A lot of innocent people who walked up and down Broadway, Lindale, Plymouth, Penn, Lowry, lost their lives. That's when the takeover pretty much began, the real takeover that we still see today. Begin, and people was going, well, nothing's going to happen. We don't have leadership that's going to take care of this problem. You know, I know it's not a Maple Grove, but the people, the taxpayers, should have every right. People who pay taxes on a house, who actually own their home, and even people who were, you know, renting there, was good renters that kept their yards up, made sure everything was nice. You know, those people are the ones that was going, nothing is changing. It's getting worse. Mm. You look at Broadway today, and from the time that I moved over there, I moved in North Minneapolis in 1996 when Mayor Shells Belton was having that program where she was trying to bring families back to Minneapolis. And we bought our first house right there. And in 1996, by 99, I was looking for a place to move my family. Because like I said, I lived right in the middle of everything that was going on. there wasn't a day that I did not drive down Lyndale that I didn't see yellow tape, or go down Penn and I didn't see teddy bears and a memorial for somebody who just got shot. You know?
Yeah.
So it was truly the product that was in the community at the time, what was going on.
We have to take a quick break. Our guest, Reverend Tim Christopher, and discussing what we can do, how can we take back the communities, especially right now. There's so much derision in our country, in our world, and certainly in our cities. There's racial inequality. There's racial stress and pressure that still exists here. People are afraid to make moves for fear that it will be misconstrued and misunderstood. Is there a way that we, the people, can come together and fix the problems that we see? And Reverend Tim, I'd love some more of your insight, because I love the fact that you understand the communities, you understand the people that are there and what's taking place, and you don't sugarcoat, you don't broad stroke it or minimize the issues. So let's talk about that. And if you have questions or thoughts, 651-461-9226. That's the WCCO talk and text line, 651-461-9226. I'm Dave Schrader, filling in for Shaletta here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Shaletta has a day off. I'm Dave Schrader, filling in my guest, Reverend Tim Christopher. Tim, I grew up in the Illinois area, just 22 miles west of Chicago. I was there when Mayor Jane Byrne, a prominent white female mayor, I think the first female mayor of Chicago, decided enough was enough, and she moved into Caprini Green, which was the slumland of slumlands. It was one of the most dangerous hotbeds of villainy and scum, as they would say in the Star Wars world. But she moved in, and it was cleaned up, and it became a tolerable place for people to coexist. And that was surprising. I've heard that it has since fell back into disrepair. But, changes like this can be made. Why do you feel that government and taxpayers are not stepping up to do this? Is it just straight up fear for their own lives because of the community that currently lives and exists in that area?
Well, I think that right now, leadership feels that the only thing they have to do is give some of these organizations money. And they refuse to look at the true reason why we're having these problems. You know, a lot of these problems, it is poverty, don't get me wrong. But I believe that if we go into these schools and deal with these troubled kids, I think we can knock a lot of this out. I think if we give some of our kids who are going through the trouble, who don't get to see the outside of, you know, Minneapolis, at least only once a month, that's going to hurt them. I mean, I'm going to believe in what I see, right? And if these kids have had the opportunity maybe to go to a Maple Grove or Plymouth or Hopkins or something like that for school and get them out of this war-torn area, you know, where they hear gunshots, where they walk it home from school and somebody drive up to him and think that, you know, this guy bullied him at some point in time and he want to punk him and things of that sort. They give these kids an opportunity to see that they can grow, then the community is going to grow. But as long as you keep these kids locked up the way that they are and don't give them opportunity to get an education, don't give them an opportunity to see that things in their lives can be much better than what it is, then I think we're going to stay in the situation that we're in. I do believe that we can make a difference. There can be a difference that can be made, but just throwing millions of dollars to these organizations and these organizations call themselves doing something, it hasn't worked. And they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, instead of going and getting the head of the snake. That's the family unit, right? We all talk about, you know, I always hear this nuclear family. I always hear about, oh, there should be a mom and a dad in the house. I believe that too. I 110% believe that. But let's be real for a second, okay? It's not going to happen for a while. And the kids that are running around here today more than likely don't have a father in the house. So what do? We work with the mom. And we get the mom to the point to try where you try to understand what's going on in this household that we can work with these kids to make these kids better. The big thing up at the Capitol right now is SROs, correct? Oh, we need SROs in the school. It's not every kid in the school that's a problem. They know who the problem kid is, Dave. They know who these kids are. Then why don't we work with those kids to make it better for them? Why can't we find programs to help the mom, to help the kid? So what do? We lock the school down, right? We fold the kid up or put him down on the floor where he can't breathe. And then we let that kid go back to the same problems that he was at the school with those problems.
Do you think?
So now we
let me ask real quickly then. Do you think, you know, it's real easy as a middle class white man to stand back and point fingers and see the problems and say this, this, and this. I think that we've lost respect for authority on every level.
Yes.
In every race.
Yes.
I don't think this is a black problem. I don't think this is an Asian problem. I don't think this is a Hmong problem. I don't think this is a white problem. I think that we have gone so far to try to and I understand an aspect of this, but you know, trying to lighten up on people and not hold them as responsible has been criminal in my eyes, because
that's right.
You no longer have the sense of responsibility. Kids have no fear for authority, no respect for authority. Well, Dave, there should never be fear. Yes, there should. Fear is what teaches us not to put our hands on the fire. Fear is what teaches us not to jump on the fragile, you know, ice water. We have to have a respectful fear of a situation to understand that there are repercussions for our actions. And if you have no respect or fear for the repercussions, you go to jail or you get killed. And that's not an answer that should happen for anybody. How do we, and I know these are big questions, I'm not asking you for the definitive answers, but how do we start to get this back? I mean, we have swung so far, and you said, you know, we know who the problem child is. But everybody's so afraid to address it because I can't single Josh Wheeler out, because if I make Josh Wheeler feel bad about being Josh Wheeler, I can now be sued. The school district can be sued. These things can be sued because we've made Josh feel bad, and we can't do that, which means then they become a victim of their own circumstances and of our own over-concern. And instead of saying, that sucks, it's going to hurt his feelings, but you know what? I'd rather hurt his feelings today and have him learn to be a better person in the long run than to not say anything and let him continue to be a blight to everybody. And I don't mean you purposely, Josh. I was just using the name. But people are afraid to make that step now, Reverend. What do you think we can do? Or is this even fixable at this point?
It is fixable. But again, Dave, we have to start with the family, right? Because the people who are out in the streets causing problems, causing trouble, have a family. They go back to a house, and that house is probably rife with problems, rife with trouble. You know, maybe mom and grandma is in that house raising boys, and it's hard to raise boys. So these boys can run all over place and do whatever they want and act any way they want to act. And the next thing you know, here they are out here in the streets doing whatever. There is no leadership. We've lost the ability to be leaders all the way around, whether there's leaders in the House, whether there's leaders at the city council, whether there's leaders at the Capitol. We don't have any leaders anymore. So because we don't have any leaders anymore, we're able to run out and do whatever we want. And because we're able to do whatever we want, we have some out there going, don't punish them because we failed them, right?
Right.
And because we failed them, we can't put them in jail. Because we failed them, we can't make them feel bad because they're doing the wrong thing. Wrong is wrong.
Right.
You shoot and kill somebody, you need to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
There is no bargaining at all. You go to jail. That's just how it works. It's always been that way. And it shouldn't be one of these, oh, well, we put so many black men in jail. We can't keep filling the prison up with black men. If black men are shooting, killing people on the streets of Minneapolis, oh, we can fill it up, as far as I'm concerned. People know good from bad.
Right.
That's just how it works. You learn that at 5 years old, right? Mom tell you don't do something, you do it. Mom spanked that hand. Well, I know I did something bad, but I'm going to sit here and somebody shoot somebody, plead guilty on it, and yeah, I'm going to give you 5 years. No,
right.
Shouldn't work that way, bro.
If that 5 years occurs, what are your thoughts on this? We understand this person might have been a victim of the circumstances they were in, where they saw violence as their only way. That 5 years is going to be intensive restructuring. That 5 years is going to be making you work in the communities that you were terrorizing to make it a better place to live. We're going to make sure that when you leave this 5 years, you will have learned economics. You will have learned how to cook for yourself. You will have learned how to take care of your finances. You will have learned the important aspects of what it's like to have responsibility, not just yard time. And if you want, you can educate. You know, I think that if we started at, you said it kind of at the beginning, if we can take people back to a place of education and take them off the streets, give them a sense of purpose, it helps all the way around. No matter what race, religion, or sexuality you are, there should be no reason that you hide under the umbrella of your situation. And maybe you didn't know better because you felt like there was no other option for you. Then let's give them the option, but make sure that they don't have to like it, but the 5 years they're going to spend here is going to be focused on making a better life for them so that when they leave, we feel better about the person that we're injecting back into the deal instead of them having time to create a new gang-like community in prison, which only reinforces the thug nature and then re-release them into the population. I think it's time we start focusing on what are we doing in prisons to make sure that people's lives are changing.
Well, one of the things that I had been pushing for the past couple of years.
Reverend Tip, I'll talk about that in a second. I just realized we're up against our break. Let me take the quick break. We'll come back. Talk to me about that when we return. I'm Dave Schrader. This is News Talk 830 WCCO. Dave Schrader filling in for Shaletta. Police Chief Brian O'Hara is going to join us in just a few minutes. Right now we have Reverend Tim Christopher on the line. I know you've got an exciting party, a baby shower for your granddaughter coming up. Congratulations on that, Reverend Tim. We'll get you to give us your insights right now on what we were discussing before the break, and I'll let you get to that party.
Yeah, so one of the things that I had been pushing for and asking is to open up a place. You know, we had a totem town at one point in time where we can send our kids to that was having trouble, having problems. And I've been an opponent push to bring that back, but do it in a military style, right? You send these kids, these troubled kids to a place like that. You get them up at a certain time. They go to bed at a certain time. They are in a military style place versus just sending them to daycare, because that's basically what they pretty much call it. And then you just let them out. They don't come out with a GED. They don't come out with any type of special skills than being, you know, worse than what they were when they was going in there, because they can get together and talk about what they want to do when they get out. That's what we need. We need something that we can rehabilitate these kids. Just like you sent a young man into the military. The military strips this young man down, this young man, and then build a man. And when you come back, that's what you are. You're a man. And that's what needs to be done now. We can't get these kids get in trouble, and then we put them in juvie for a year maybe and expect them to come out of juvie being angels. It's not going to happen. It's just going to harden them. But if you go and you give them something to work towards, to work for,
structure,
I believe we can make a difference that way. But see, we have to get to the point to where we really want to do this. This can't be one of those things, oh, we're hurting the kids and they're going in these places and we got them locked up enough. We can't do that. We can't do that anymore. Those days are over with. We have to get to a point to where we're sitting there saying, this is for the benefit of this kid, And not only is this a benefit of this kid, but this is a benefit for his family. Not only is a benefit for the family, but this is a benefit for the law-abiding citizen that could be walking down the street and that very kid jumps that law-abiding citizen, carjacked that law-abiding citizen, hit that law-abiding citizen, beat that law-abiding citizen. That's where we have to start thinking, that we are really helping these kids be better. And when they get older, they can be citizens. Even though they made mistakes back here, they can be true citizens that right. will open a door for a woman. You understand what I'm saying?
Help an
old lady across the street, stop his car, and change a tire for someone. Those are the things that I'm talking about.
Reverend Tim Christopher, it's a pleasure catching up. We'll have to do this again. Thank you so much. Congratulations on this big day for you and your family, and stay safe out there. Thank you for all the good you're doing for the community.
Well, I appreciate you, Dave. Thank you very much for having me on. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.